Well, look
who's back. It's First Off You're Wrong, the podcast by two dudes smart enough to see problems, but too dumb to figure out how to fix them. I'm Luke, with me is Jeremiah.
Luke has been very mean to me leading up to this.
Do we not remember what just happened 10 seconds ago, where I go up to...
I was in defense.
Okay, whatever. It doesn't matter. Announcements. Last week, we had combat sports. What is that pinging? Is it your ductwork here?
I hear zero pinging.
Okay, I must have tinnitus. Anyway, last week is...
You've been in a crawl space all day.
Not all day. It was only like 20 minutes, but I'm still clean, which is fine. I might have cobwebs in my hair, though. Combat sports...
Do you have a TBI from combat sports?
We're all fine. I don't have, what do they call it when you hit your head really hard a bunch of times?
A TBI?
CTE. CTE, that's right, CTE. I do not have that, yeah. So I'm doing okay. I'm doing all right. Anyway, anything from that episode that you remember that you loved? Quirky times?
We talked about... Mike Tyson and Jake Paul for way too long. That's about all I remember.
Well, I mean, it was mostly that the post stuff. You talked about Mike Tyson and him. I did.
I'm admitting that right now. Why are you acting like I'm not admitting it?
A lot of people, I don't want to say who, but a lot of people have been saying that you've been ruining the show and that their favorite host is me.
You know, I just...
And what do you think about that? Man,
that stupid audio message of you quitting the podcast has deleted.
It disappeared. I knew it would disappear and I'd win. I quit the podcast for about, 30 seconds yesterday, but I'm back, so I guess...
Are you back?
This is actually my... They fear how back I am.
How back we truly are.
But I guess this is episode one for me then. You'd say we restart, so you're almost to a year. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Congratulations on that. I was at the Taco Bell down the road, and the guy behind the counter said, "I know you, man." And I said, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, you're Frosty." And I go, "I'm who?" And he goes, "My man Frosty, what's up, dude?" And I said, I am not Frosty. Hit him with a disclaimer.
Who is Frosty? All right. As you guys know, this podcast is mainly opinion-based. Of course, as Christians, our utmost authority is the Bible. However, some of the things we talk about may not be directly referenced in the Bible. They might not be directly talked about, or they might be gray areas in the Christian life, matters of Christian liberty. Our goal is to make you come away thinking about things in a new light or thinking about things maybe you haven't thought of before. And with that said, Frosty, what are people wrong about this week?
People are wrong about isolationism.
Isolationism.
I can't say it. No one has made fun of me this week about Areopagus. I've been made fun of about other things, but not about reading. Mostly because I'm around people that can't speak English that well, so I'm the only one that can read English. It is crazy, though. Actually, I learned some of the guys that work with me, they actually do not know how to read. I just learned this like the other week. Like I send them texts, and they send me texts back that make no sense and aren't real words. And then I'm like, "Why do you do that?" And then they're like, "Well, I don't know how to read or spell or write." I'm like, "How did you get this far in life? That's great, though.
Wow. I mean,
welcome to the world." But anyway, yeah, isolationism, it is bad. It also is a policy that was believed in World War II and was ultimately disputed between foreign. World War II is ultimately a dispute between foreign nations, and that the United States had no good reason to get involved. The best policy, they claimed, was the United States to build up its own defense and avoid antagonizing either side. That also is isolationism, for anyone that wants to know.
Woodrow Wilson is single-handedly the man responsible for destroying the United States.
Was he the big stick guy?
No, that was Theodore Roosevelt.
I think it was Benjamin Franklin, but that's okay.
No, it was, could have been, John Kellogg, too.
Benjamin Franklin was the best president we had.
He was. That's why he's on the $100 bill.
Yeah,
he was top G.
Go listen to Manosphere. Anyway, do you want to, I kind of have a definition that I made, kind of, from just reading.
Because
would you like me to read it?
When I think of the term isolationism, I do think of the, going back to history class and learning about World War I.
I think that's where everyone's brain goes.
But we're talking about it more in a how does this sense of isolationism affect the church and the individual Christian? So yeah, what definition did you have?
So I got staying away from society to practice restraint and not to be bogged down by what happens in the world, and it's used as a mechanism to get rid of distractions to focus more on God or on family. Now, these aren't saying that sounds really nice. That sounds actually really, really good, mm-hmm. but I think in a lot of cases that we're going to see, it can actually be a detriment to people and in detriment to your faith.
The classic example might be when we talk about whole groups or denominations. You know, there's the Amish and then certain more conservative Mennonites as well. They are very withdrawn from society to a point where they said, okay, you know what, we're not advancing beyond this time and we're all going to stay like this. We're not going to, you know, we won't even use buttons. We're not going to do anything because we see that the modern society is a detriment to us. Wow, that wind is crazy.
That wind is howling.
We're in a basement and it's crazy. But this is probably the best place to be right now.
Has it ever been this windy here?
Up here?
Yeah.
No.
Like, I mean, just in Birmingham.
Well, my parents' house was on a, is on a big hill.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was somewhat windy, especially like on the second floor. It would get pretty windy up there.
Yeah.
But I never experienced it like this.
I know. And it's like it's everywhere. Crazy. It doesn't matter where I go. It's so windy. Anyway, I'm sorry. Keep going. There's a weather update here in Birmingham.
Call us James Spann. Yeah. You have the Amish who they very much, you know, they're raising barns and doing all this and, you know, horse and buggy. That's it. They got strong-armed into, you know, installing smoke detectors in their public spaces like their churches by the government. And that took years for them to do in like Pennsylvania.
Oh, the government actually made them do that?
Yeah, because they said in the public spaces, you have to have fire alarms because if you don't and it starts, you know, no one's going to know. Which, understandable, you know, there's arguments for that either way, but whatever. That's not why we're talking about this. But then you have Mennonites Mennonite is, you know, some of them don't even call themselves Mennonites anymore. They call themselves Anabaptists. I went on a rabbit trail.
I did. I found a couple articles about them. Yes.
We definitely went down. I went down a rabbit trail on Mennonites today, but, they call themselves Anabaptists. Some of them, the more, I don't want to even say liberal, but the less conservative sects call themselves Anabaptists. But then the more conservatives are pretty similar to Amish, but they refuse to pay into Social Security or any insurance because they view it as you're denying God's control of your life by allowing using insurance, right? Mennonites, they, you know, allow, you can drive a car, but it has to be plain black, right? You can't have any flashy color. Okay. It has to be black. That's the only car you're in. It cannot have any sport features, even on a base model car. You can't have any sporty features on it. It cannot be flashy. It has to be very subdued. No short sleeves. Yet men have to wear long sleeves. And, you know, obviously I'm talking about the more conservative. There's groups that spread out farther and farther. But
did you read on the, it's like the Herrerites or something like that? Or Herberites? They're like this weird sect. Uh-uh. I don't know if it's the Mennonites or the Amish that they're a part of, but they're like hardcore. The ones you're saying that are just completely radical. Like they do not go outside of their community. They are not allowed to talk to people outside of their community. They are only like the times where they actually have to come into contact with those people. They're very nice. They're very loving people, apparently. But, of course, the Huffington Post did a whole thing about this. I don't know what it is with the Huffington Post. I've been, like, every week I have, like, a Huffington Post article that I find that I, like, read. And I don't like to support them at all with any of my eyes. But that's fine. Whatever. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry. I just wanted to add the more extreme people.
Yeah. But, there's popular groups that have that. Even you can go to Fundamental Baptists, especially when we were growing up, and even now today with the IFB and the NIFB movements, they're very much withdrawn, even though they might all have, you know, they might all have jobs working out in the world and doing all this, But in a spiritual sense, they are withdrawn because the second they have any form of disagreement with someone else who is a professing Christian, it's anathema. You know, you cannot associate yourself with those dirty Presbyterians because they baptize babies. Right? Don't clip that.
Time to clip.
That mentality has seeped into, like I said, the IFB and the NIFB. And I'm sure there's tons and tons and tons of other groups that we can talk about that are, you know, group wide. This is what we believe. Any venture outside of that is immoral and wrong. You must stay away from the outsiders because they're living in sin with all they do. But you brought up a good point too. Outside of the groups, when we were talking about this earlier, you talked about how it's also, there's a lot to do with individuals who say things like, oh, I don't need to go to church, you know, the church is in my heart. Or people who say they used COVID as an excuse to never go back to church because, yeah, you know, well, I don't want to, we can just watch it online now, it's more convenient.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, and everyone I think heard the arguments, whether it was family or friends, where especially in COVID, when it all stopped, or when people stopped being crazy, the attending church again was like, well, I don't have to. I can just, my home is like the church for our family, and yeah, we can just watch it. It's perfectly fine. And I don't even think that it started because we were so used to it at a certain point that isolating just became normal. So it was like, well, this is fine because this is what we've been doing for a while now, so everything's okay. You know, I've seen it be detrimental in my own family. I have still people that don't go to church, not because of COVID, but then some because of just, they'll still bring that up. Oh, well, there's sickness and whatever. I don't want to go, but I'll go to work, but I'm not going to go to church. Like, yeah, I'm going to go to the grocery store, but I'm not going to go to church. You know, you see that with the COVID thing, but then you can also go to, just, you know, being just isolating yourself from even, going and being with people that don't go to your church or that aren't Christians or something like that. I think that's a huge thing as well. You know, Christ is our example. And we have he said, you know, what is it? The sick are the ones that need the doctor. I think that a lot of people, I watch a lot of people and I have lots of friends that kind of, they don't venture out past, like, you know, they have the church group, they have their other like Christian friends, but then it's like, there's no,
yeah,
you know, and there's nothing wrong with hanging out with Christians. Obviously there's nothing wrong with that. And it's like, you don't need to like seek out, I need unbeliever friends. Like, I need to find them. It's no, but like, if you come across someone who's an unbeliever, don't need to just automatically, well, I can't be friends with them because we're not going to see eye to eye. No, that's fine. You need to be friends with them, and you need to venture out because you need to be the vessel that Christ wants you to be, to potentially be the help that brings them, that he uses to bring them to him.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and that kind of plays into what I talked about with the fundamentalist viewpoint. And you can use that term fundamentalist to talk about, you know, anywhere from NIFB to Mennonites to Presbyterians to even, you know, Pentecostals or other people like that. There's going to be the fundamentalist mindset with a lot of different groups across the board. And that idea of, we are the ones who have it exactly right, and right, so yeah, we have to avoid anyone with a different opinion. I'm not saying that we need to be ecumenical and, you know, oh, let's go ahead and invite the Mormons and the Catholics and the Muslims all together because we all believe in Jesus in one way or another and it doesn't matter. We can all just, you know, why can't we be friends and sing Kumbaya around the fire?
And sing Why Can't We Be Friends?
Yeah. That's not what I'm saying. Of course, there are things to divide over. Of course, there are things to say, I will not associate with you because of these things. However, getting to that point of, I will not associate with you in any aspect of my life,
yeah,
is a very it should be done very rarely, in my opinion. Like, I don't want to say the term,
but you're going to.
When someone's put out of the congregation, what is it? Shunned.
Excommunication.
Shunned, you know, we're talking about kind of Amish mentality here, too. So shunned, I think, is an apt word. But
shunned, reshunned.
You know, if we are to shun someone and say, you know what, I'm not going to associate, like, what can we say someone is guilty of that we say, we are not, there is no reason for me to even get close and ever talk to that person again, right? There's very little that we have the right to say that about. A very popular thing that's going on right now, and there's been one or two OnlyFans models who have turned away from what they've been doing, their sexual impurity, and come to Christ. And they have deleted their entire, you know, everything that they have access to, they have gotten rid of. They are trying to become, they're trying to come to a biblical purity, and mm-hmm. they're running away from their past life and embracing the new life in Christ. But then you have these people in their Twitter comments, or in the, you know, if they do an interview with someone, in the comments on that, saying how, you know, once a porn star, always a porn star. There's no change for you ever.
Once saved, always saved.
But
that's so and ridiculous. It's,
and Samuel C. from Slow to Write, which is an excellent blog and excellent Twitter to follow, he said, if you are looking at these people and saying you have no, you know, they're not saved because of what they done, you are dramatically underestimating your own sin and yes. the depths of your depravity that Christ saved you from.
Right. Well, I mean, think even, what's the guy from Wretched Radio? It was a really, really good video where he was, I can't remember what he was talking about, but it was one of these things where, like, oh, I have this addiction. I have this addiction. See, we don't have an addiction to blank. We have a sin addiction.
Yeah.
All of us do. And to sit here, it's not saying, well, we, like, if someone is doing pornography, it's not saying, oh, well, we can't call that person out, that guy or that girl out for it because look at my sins. No, we are still we need to call them out for it. This is what you're doing is wrong. But when they repent, turn from it, and follow Christ, to then go back and be like, but you did that, and, you know, I can't look at you as the new creature in Christ. You're always that sinner. You're always that person.
Yeah.
It's wrong. It's a horrible way to view things because it's incorrect. And what if Christ looked at you that way?
Yeah.
What if Christ looked let's look at your body of work. And look at my body of work. I mean, really, like, I don't even have to judge any of you. I'll judge myself. Like, look at my body of work and what I've done in my life. And if Christ looked at me the way that all these people look at people like that, then I'm going to hell.
Mm-hmm.
Don't clip that.
And it's, like Samuel C. said, it's a drastic misunderstanding of your own
mm-hmm.
unrighteousness. It is, you don't comprehend your own sin. You don't comprehend the purpose of Christ's atonement. You don't understand. And obviously there are things that you can point to and say, like, okay, yeah, that's bad that happened. You know, these women have made mistakes. They have gone about their lives in certain ways.
Yeah.
And there also is a large group of people who say, oh yeah, I'm repenting and turning to Christ. And then they continue doing what they're doing.
Right. Yeah.
So I can understand hesitancy. Like when Kanye had his whole thing about, hey, you know, he made Jesus his king.
Yeah.
And he talked all about how Jesus is the best and definitely had some weird theology. And then your
wife comes up to me and goes, you still follow Kanye West? And I'm like, I do. And she's like, yeah, on your Instagram. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know I did anymore. And she's like, he's literally just posting like naked pictures of his girlfriend, I'm mm-hmm. guessing, or his wife now. Or
yeah, just, I don't know.
Whatever it is. I don't even know. And I was like, oh. And so I go to it. I'm like, wow, he really is. Unfollowed him, all that stuff. But yeah, like he went through that whole
period. And in your defense, you're never on your Instagram.
Yeah,
so.
but like all of the years of him going through stuff where he may sound a little crazy, but it was like, oh, Kanye really is. Like, mm-hmm. this is a real thing. And then it's just like, boop, like right there.
And what's different with Kanye, too, is you could tell at the beginning with Kanye, he makes a profession of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has a severe lack of understanding of the gospel. And I remember, I think it was my brother said, you know, we were having a conversation about it, and he said, if Kanye is truly saved, he needs to be under someone's leadership. He should not be in a position of leadership, which is absolutely correct.
It's the position he's taking because mm-hmm. he's got the big platform. So yeah. he's starting to make these claims and
he needs to humble himself underneath someone in a position of leadership in a church and get good sound teaching about what it is that he is believing in. He needs to get that understanding of things, right? He needs to become more, quote, small o, orthodox, right? Well, he didn't do that. He went to Lakewood. He did all this stuff with, you know, Joel Osteen's church.
Yeah.
Going around doing his Sunday service with a bunch of other random people, saying things that were just, you know, borderline heresy. And then he never really made any sound statements of his faith or anything beyond just, you know, the superficial level stuff. And so being critical of that when you're seeing him profess Christ, but at the same time seems to lack an understanding of what it means to be Christian, being critical of that, or not even critical, just hesitant of that is one thing. But if Kanye were to do that, and there were people out there who immediately were saying, no, Kanye's not saved. There's no way he could be saved because look at what he's done in his past. Look at the music he's singing and all that. And it's like, that's not the right approach either.
Yeah. And I think
don't just jump on a bandwagon because he says it. And also don't jump on the opposite of the bandwagon because of what he's done before.
Right. And a lot of that attitude of the, you know, whatever, there's no way, or you automatically, you know, I guess it's just more like there's no way. Like that stuff, I think comes a lot from, it's like we're guarding Christianity. And it's, no, you have to, like when you come in, you better know like everything. Like you better know what type of denomination you are. You better know why you're that. You better know this many verses, you better, like all these things where it's like, no, people like Kanye shouldn't be, the problem is they're in a position of power because of just who he is. And then instead of, like you said, humbling himself and coming down to like, hey, I'm going to be under the mentorship of somebody else, you know, just start spouting stuff. But it, like, that's not right. But also it's like we as Christians, the sitting here and being like, we're only going to hang out with ourselves. What happens when an outsider comes in? Because it normally isn't where, oh, we open arms. Like, I mean, I've talked about when I was visiting churches, and I went to our church that was the first church I visited, was the church I go to now. And everyone was like, how are you? It's great to meet you, blah, blah. It wasn't like, I didn't feel like I was in this bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And I still, to this day, I mean, there are some people I would say that like, they don't really socialize outside of the circle of church.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we have a very good group of people that are always willing to be talking to anyone. I bring my non-believer friends around, your brother, it was Jay and Jeff, when we did the poker night that one time, we brought our friend over and Aaron was there too. And it was like, we could all sit there and talk. It wasn't like we didn't sit there and start grilling him about Christ, but it was like, hey, you have, what would that, I can't count, five believers sitting here in front of you. And that's a great thing. It really is for an unbeliever to be sitting there with five other people, other men that are like, no, we all believe in Christ. We believe in what Christ did, is a fantastic thing. And it's something that the church really, like, everyone in the church needs to start working towards, is like not pushing towards, everyone just needs to have unbelieving friends.
Yeah.
But it's when you're in public and you're in your workspace, or you're going to college, or you're, you know, I don't know, going to grad school, whatever it is, traveling, you know, you can meet people anywhere and they're not going to be Christians. And you need to be able to associate with them. And you, this mentality of, well, I'm only really around Christians is a good thing to a point. And at some point, it's like you need to know what it's like to be able to talk to someone who doesn't believe what you believe.
Mm-hmm. I think one overlooked part with that, because there are definitely people, when it comes to the individual isolationism, especially the people mm-hmm. who say like, oh, I don't really need to go to church, I'm a Christian yeah. regardless. They say, well, you know, I don't really have any Christian friends. It's pretty much just me. I think that's a bad point too to be at. I have non-believing friends. I have non-Christian friends. They all know what I believe because they've been around me long enough to have an understanding that, oh, hey, Jeremiah's a Christian. But at the same time, my closest friends are all believers because there comes a point in the friendship where how can I relate to someone at a deep enough level and yet spiritually we are at odds with each other?
Yeah, right? I think a lot of my relationships with friends pretty much past college, you know, once it was like the delineation is set here, mm-hmm. like this is what I believe. If they're not believers, you're right. It's like, no, we have a good friendship. I'll hang out with you. We can go to lunch. We can hang out. We can talk. But it comes to a point where it's like, you know, I'm probably not having you over like for dinners and to sit there and like be around me till like 11 o'clock at night. Now, I do have some like that, but those are mostly family members mm-hmm. that aren't believers. And they're, of course, always welcome to be at my house till whenever. And I have a deeper relationship with them, obviously, because they're family. But yeah, it's just like you said, there's that disconnect that makes it where there's a level where we can't really, we can't go past that.
Yeah. And it's, you know, I have friends who are Muslim. I have some friends who are Buddhist. I have a couple friends I'm pretty relatively close to who are Buddhist. And, you know, the conversations I have with them, you know, 90%, a lot of the conversations that I have with them are just, you know, normal people having normal conversations. You know, we're riding in the car and we're talking about music or whatever. But then there's always the point where we get to talking about spiritual matters and we start talking about the difference between Buddhism and Christianity. And there's always a disconnect there. And so until you can get past that and you're in a lot more tight-knit agreement on the spiritual matters, there will be that disconnect. And it's palpable, I think is the right word. You can feel that there's a difference. Even though we're good friends and we hang out and we have no problem talking to each other, there is a slight, something's not clicking 100%. And then you compare the same conversation with, you know, you or with another friend, any Christian friend.
Wait, we're friends?
Are we? even though we might not agree on everything theologically, like theology wise, we have that common factor of being in the family of Christ, being in the family of God. And that changes things. One point I want to make on, or one of the points I want to make on I call it individual isolationism earlier, where how there's people who say, you know, oh, I don't need to go to church, or I commune with God on my own time. I do things like that. Is Ecclesiastes 4:9-12. Do you have that one?
No, I do not have that one.
Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. When you think about that, especially that picture you get at the last second, a threefold cord is not easily broken. Mm-hmm. Or when one, if you're alone, you get knocked down by an evil person. If there's someone else to help you back up, you both can stand against him. How do you expect to fight your battles alone? How do you expect to be able to withstand the spiritual attacks of the world, the flesh, and the devil when you have no one there to hold you up with you.
And a good example of a spiritual attack, going to church, I think almost everyone listening can agree, it is hard to go to church every single week, especially like a Wednesday night.
Yeah.
I think your dad talks about it all the time. He literally goes, I don't want to go. I don't want to. I don't want to go to this, but I go. And it's, again, you have no one that's, like, you're just at home and you're like, well, you know, we could watch it or we could just not watch it.
Yeah.
We could watch it and turn it on and we can do a bunch of other stuff while it's playing. When you're sitting there if you're not isolating, you're with your group, it is easier. Accountability partners is an interesting topic, but the accountability that comes from having a group of believers that's like, hey, where, you know, is everything okay? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, there's times where I don't show up to a Sunday and I get like three text messages from people, hey, are you okay? And I'm like, hey, I haven't quit the church. It's one Sunday and my child is sick every week. For the past month. And so I'm going to come to church. Don't worry. I haven't left. But that's good because look at even like my dad, he doesn't have that. He has me and Aaron go listen to Pokemon, that and Manosphere that will sit there and say stuff to him.
Yeah.
But that's the only accountability he has is his two sons. And there's no accountability to go to church. There's no accountability to sit there and be like, I need to go. He's fighting it all by himself, mm-hmm. and it's not working. Mm-hmm. I'm watching it in real time. It's not working.
Yeah, and it can't work, right?
Yeah.
Even you go to the most worldly of worldly therapist who is, you know, doing whatever crazy therapy they want to do. Everyone agrees it's bad to be by yourself. It is. In every aspect, if you're a key indicator of something bad is about to happen is how often a person enjoys being by themselves. I watched a thing. It was one of those stupid YouTube drama things that you and I watch. And it was nice. About the...
Was it Oompaville?
No, it wasn't Oompaville. It was someone else. But
he's been coming up on my search like so much now since you like actually told me what his name was. So I kept thinking it was Koompaville.
But anyways, they were talking about a YouTuber who he got famous during COVID and then he had a mental breakdown, spent a bunch of time by himself and then wound up dying he killed himself by a drug overdose.
Yowzers.
Playing video games by himself. And he had been by himself for months. Just no, like he was streaming, so he had that. But besides that occasional stream, he was just posting on Twitter and playing video games, playing Overwatch, and then died of a drug overdose on, like, I think it was ketamine or something. But just, you know, that indicator of, okay, someone's alone, that's not good.
Right.
Well, why is it not good? Well, because when you're alone, you start doing things that aren't good for you. When you don't have that feedback of another person with you, things go poorly. Whether it's a friend, whether it's a spouse, whatever, you need that. And in the spiritual walk, you need the other brothers and sisters of Christ, in the church to be there with you, to bear your burdens, to help. We talked about that in the religious trauma episode of... you know, bearing each other's burdens.
Go listen to that episode.
Right? If someone in the church, their husband passes away, it's immediate. Everyone else in the church should be there and should be involved in their life and be saying, hey, what can we do? How can we help? What can we do? Even if it's something good, like, you know, having a child. I know with our church and with pretty much every church I've ever been to, if someone has a baby, there's immediately a list of women who are saying, okay, we're going to have food for them every day for the next 6 weeks.
And how lonely is it to not have that, especially for mm-hmm. the women? I mean, obviously we're not women, but we're married to them. And, you know, I can attest that like having a kid, like I think if we weren't in the church, it would have been horrible. It would mm-hmm. be extremely lonely, not because of raising her. Yes, actually that too, but not necessarily that being the main issue. It would have been just having these other women that know what it's like to be pregnant, know what it's like to have their first kid, come alongside you and be like, hey, look, if you need something, we're here for you. And so it's not just, you don't just have family, but you also have your friends, the friends that can be there and actually do those things for you. And yeah, you could be like, well, I mean, you don't have to have that in the church. Well, I don't think we're saying that this is only the church will give you a group of friends. We're talking, in this case, it's isolationism across the board, because like Jeremiah is saying, you can go to the most secular of secular therapists or psychologists or psychiatrists and ask them about this, and they're going to tell you the same thing. They're going to say it's a very bad idea to sit here and isolate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, you know, every once in a while being alone with your thoughts is a good thing, right? To, you know, oh, how many times have you said, oh, I just need to clear my head?
Yeah.
Right? You go for a walk in the woods.
For how long though, right?
Yeah.
Couple weeks in the woods, Steve?
How long is it healthy to be alone with your thoughts? It's a pretty easy experiment to do. Sit alone with your thoughts for 15 minutes and you might work something out. For 30 minutes, you're questioning your entire existence and your entire life structure up until that point. So having that structure of people around you is so beneficial. And I can't understand why Christians would say, oh, I'm fine, and then not be a part of a church. And especially, I mean, there's even an aspect of this when it goes to things like mega churches that you say, oh, yeah, I'm a member of a church. I go to church every Sunday. Every time there's a service, anytime the doors are open, I'm in there. But with so many of these mega churches, there's no interaction outside or even inside the church.
I went to one for like almost a year and I don't know one person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you meet like people that are already your friends. They're like, oh, yeah, I go there too. But I cannot name one person from that church that I met. And it's not saying like, oh, it's all their fault. I mean, it's also my fault. But the culture there is, it's just, hey, we're here to get to check it off. We're going to check this one off of the weekly list. We're done. We move on. And I think that culture is completely
I've heard people at mega churches say, yeah, I'm so glad you guys are here so we can start this week off on a high note. That's all it is.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
I got a verse, Proverbs 18:1. I guess I'll do 1 and 2. Whoever. Oh. What?
Oh, 1 and 2.
Okay, wow. You did like 15 verses, dude. Even memorize it.
That was 4.
Whoever isolates himself, seeks his own desire, he breaks out against all sound judgment. A fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his opinion. That verse it can be applicable even to me, because for a long time it was like, you know, I didn't really sit and, you know, I never had people around me to be like asking opinions on, well, what do we think about this? Or what would you say about that when it came to like my faith? Mm-hmm. It was just Luke will decide. Luke will watch. How many YouTube videos can Luke watch to then, you know, formulate a point and then go argue for it, even though he has like absolutely no idea? And even to this day, like, there's stuff that you talk about. I look at you and I'm like, I just keep shaking my head. I'm like, I have no clue what he's talking about. Like, I'm not as far along as a lot of people are in their faith, I feel. And I know. And so I haven't done these in-depth, like really digging deep into a lot of this stuff. But I recognize that at this point, where it's like, I am willing to go to, like, you know, my cousin in Colorado, or to you, or to Jeff, or to Aaron, or to Jay, or to your dad, or, you know, to like my cousins and some other cousins and things like that, and be like, I have this question. Like, this is, I've been wrestling with this. This is what I've found on my end. What is like your opinion of what you've read and seen and observe, like, what is your opinion on it? And it used to just, it never was like that. It was, I would look something up. Okay, that's the answer. And I'm, like I said, and literally I would go and argue about it. I don't know how I would. Amazingly, I got away with a lot of it, because I guess the people I was arguing with weren't very good at arguing. But, you know, it was, again, it was more just like, I want to hear myself. This verse says, I take no pleasure in understanding, and I only enjoy expressing my own opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And my opinion was based on a YouTube video that I watched for 5 minutes and go, ooh, that sounds like fun.
And one thing I know, especially with my marriage, with me and Sarah, we there's things we disagree with. Go listen to romance novels.
I was gonna say I couldn't remember.
But the
that was a good episode.
That was a good. That's one of my favorites. Did like that.
Well, that's biased.
Yeah. Anyways, the but you know we'll get to talking about something, and it's not when I'm talking with her about X, Y, or Z. I'm not sitting here like, oh, I have to win this argument because if I don't, then, you know, I'll be shown as weak. No, it's not about winning an argument. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if she were to ever, which she hasn't, you know, express a, you know, unorthodox belief or a heretical belief, you know, that's worthy of correction. But there's a difference between correction and discussion. Mm-hmm. And being argumentative. If I was argumentative with her, you know, if we were talking about eschatology and she said, well, I believe this, and then I just start getting into a debate about it and start, you know, nailing it just like,
I have 3-4 hour YouTube videos you need to watch, okay?
Yeah, what
sweetie?
Kind of, and, you know, there were times when I would try that approach. I'm wrong. And then I realized I love this woman more than anyone else in the world. And I'm sitting here trying to score, like, you know, alley-oops and layups on her argument. What's the point?
There isn't a point.
She's not expressing something unorthodox. It's just a difference of opinion on certain things. And it would be better for me to sit here and be like, okay, well, I didn't realize that. Oh, well, maybe we should talk about it more. And then have a discussion lovingly and allow each of us. And then at the end of the conversation realize, oh, she was just saying the same thing that I believe, but in a different way.
And actually, you can cause, with the arguments you're talking about, you can cause your partner to start isolating. Mm-hmm. I don't need to talk. I'm not bringing up any more questions about my faith or statements about my faith because I don't want him to just start lecturing, yelling at me, demeaning me, talking down to me. You can isolate your own partner, which we just went on for like the past 30 minutes talking about how bad isolation is as a Christian, isolating yourself away from people to isolate your own partner. I mean, but it happens so much out there. Mm-hmm. It really does where the wife, I think even sometimes my wife looks at it and is like, you know, is this something I want to bring up with Luke? You know, and I would hope that it would never be something where she'd ultimately go, I'll just believe it, whatever. I mean, I'm not going to talk to my husband about it. And I can get into the lecturing phase. The good thing though is that she can be like, "Hey, I was just asking about like what you know if you like fruit salad or not. I don't need to know about you know what your opinions on covenantal theology are." but that's what I'm saying. We need to be, especially as husbands, we need to love our wives.
Yeah,
and loving them in a way where it's they can come to us about these things because we go to you know Timothy and it talks about how women should not teach in the church. But they should, be quiet and mm-hmm. and whatever. I didn't memorize that in Awana. I'm sorry. Wow. Okay. I was not the gold champion of that. But the point is that as the husband, our wives should be able to ask us a question mm-hmm. as the heads of our households. They should be able to ask us a question. We look at them. And even if we don't know, look at them and go, okay, well, I don't know that answer, but I'll seek that answer out for you and I'll come back to you with what I find. And we can both research that together. We can both come together and we can go through what we find, things like that, as opposed to just go along with it and be quiet.
Yeah. Something I want to ask about when we're talking about, if we're done talking about the, or
if we're just done talking do whatever. About I don't even care anymore.
Whatever. I don't care anymore either. It's our show. We're doing it live.
Again, I want to point out that was what's his name?
Bill O'Reilly.
Bill O'Reilly had no clue. Yeah. Up until I was like 30 years old, did I know that it was him. For 30 years, I went not knowing. Okay, go ahead. Just want to let you know.
Thanks, anyways, Bill. when it comes to the groups who are isolating themselves, so like the Amish.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're going back to
the Mennonites. Yeah.
Good.
I've heard them say the reason we separate ourselves from the world is because one of the examples they'll use is in Matthew 10, He talks about, and if anyone will not receive you or listen to your words, shake off the dust of your feet and leave that house or town. Truly I say to you that it will be more bearable on the day of judgment for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah than for that town. So Jesus is saying in that time, if people don't receive what you're telling them, if people don't understand what's being said and they refuse to listen to you and they're being harsh to you, then leave, shake off the dust of your feet, and go be on your own. So, because it's better.
Read it again.
So,
go read it one
there's
time.
A lot of context before that, but I don't want to read 15 verses.
We don't need context. We're just going to go with the verse.
And if anyone will
nothing bad ever happens.
And if anyone will not receive you or listen to your words, shake off the dust from your feet when you leave that town or house. Truly, I say to you, it will be more bearable on that day of judgment for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah than for that town.
So I don't hear anything about isolating yourself, though. Like it says leave, right? Mm-hmm. Meaning as in like, I mean, you leave to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's not leaving and being, hey, go form a group on a hill in Waco, Texas.
And, well, that's
different. Well, that's different. But like it's not telling us to do that. It's just saying like, hey, if you preach it and they have no ears to listen and scoff at you, and not, then it's time to go.
Yeah.
It's time to go and continue on with what Christ has commanded us to do in the Great Commission, and not just sit there and go, well, I'll just keep seeing this town that they keep. I mean, there is, of course, I think that us as humans, we take stuff to such an nth degree where it's like, well, they're mean to me a little bit. I'm leaving. Like, you know, not, it's not saying that, but it's more of, I would think of, you know, you have prayed, you have just waited for an answer from God, and it comes to you through the Holy Spirit of like, hey, these people they don't want mm-hmm. to hear this. They don't mm-hmm. want this news. Their hearts are hardened, and that's fine, but it's time to move on. And it's not time to move on to a group of people that live in 1857 in Pennsylvania or whatever. It's also not okay to, you know, retreat to the mountains. And what is it the monks that are the mountain people? They go and they isolate in the mountains and stuff like that. Or is this, who am I thinking of? I just, oh, be quiet. Like, you don't know who it is. You're so mean to me, dude. Whenever I ask these questions, you're like, I don't know. I'm going to be so quiet. And
no, I don't.
And I have monks, no clue.
Monks are just like religious men with the haircuts. They
with
wear
the bald people?
Brown hair. They're not fully bald.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a friar. Now,
yeah, that's
dude. That is Robin Hood.
Know,
okay,
man.
That's
I'm
a cartoon.
Not Catholic.
Yeah, I know. I'm not. Whatever. Anyway, I read that book. I think I talked about it.
I rob from the homeless. I rob from the blind.
Okay.
Special teams, special players.
That early church book that I was reading a couple months ago, and I think the end of it talked about the monks or the monasteries that were forming, and like the very important people of that movement, and how like they would go into the desert and they'd just be by themselves because they had all these like sexual desires and desires to like for money and so
like a hermit.
Yeah, kind of like a hermit, exactly. And they were like, oh, well, this is the best mm-hmm. form of Christianity there is, because we're just completely focused on God. We're completely focused in our prayer. We're focused just on Him. All we have are the absolute necessities. And then it's just us and God. Mm-hmm. And it was looked at as, by some, and even I think some today look at it as, oh, that would be great. I mean, you still see people doing it. They just do it in a modern way, like we were talking about. I'm not going to go to church, but I'm also not going to go out and do, I'm not going out to, you know, I'm not saying I'm going to go out party. I'm not going to go out and hang out with friends. I'm going to be in my home mm-hmm. and I'm going to just focus on Christ. And that will be perfectly fine. And I think that there's a lot of, I mean, the themes, right? Going back to what your brother has always said, the themes that you see throughout the Bible, it contradicts that mm-hmm. That notion. One verse, this whole entire chapter is about this topic, but Galatians 6 and then Galatians 6:2, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not in his neighbor, for each will have to bear his own load. talking about being with other Christians and stuff like that. And
yeah.
again, like I said, you go back and it's romanticized even today where it's like, oh yeah, those people, they're just by themselves. They were so, they're so pure. They're so close to God. I don't see themes in the Bible where it's like, yeah, us as Christians, you should totally just go on the mountains, or you should totally, you know, completely isolate yourself as a group and don't bring anyone else in, and mm-hmm. you should not venture out past the walls of the church. I also, again, now I'm okay, whatever. Now I got something else to say. So going like this thing where we have our kids, right? Mm-hmm. Younger kids, and they don't know what it's like to hang out with people outside of their church groups or outside of small groups, youth group, just church itself. And then they go to college. Mm-hmm. And then it's like that information overload thing, dude, where you have a couple of friends. Oh, well, we like to drink. We like to smoke pot. We like to do this. We like to do that. And you just take it and it goes.
Pot's totally natural, man.
Yeah.
It comes from the ground.
And you take stuff and you go, and it becomes an addiction, becomes a I like to smoke, I want to go and do different drugs, or premarital sex, all of it. You have premarital sex. What, Jeremiah, is that not, you don't like that one?
Just came out of left field. I was not expecting
why that. Is that not
I don't know
field? I gotta go write down this time. You're not allowed to do that to me. That was rude. This guy here. Write down the time, 54. So rude.
I was not rude.
Yeah, it was. You just didn't see it coming. Anyway, having sex, having all that other stuff, it comes out of nowhere, and you're not prepared for it at all because you've only been around people. And I'm saying, hey, we should expose our kids to like all of this stuff that the public schools want us to do, expose them to and things like that. But they need to be prepared for these attacks. And just having it where it's like they're only going to go to church, they're only going to go to youth group, mm-hmm. they're only going to hang out with these groups of friends, they're only going to homeschool. And by homeschooling, we're not going to let them do sports, we're not going to let them go to the clubs in the homeschooling thing, we're not going to let them do any of the other stuff. They're going to be home or at church, and then they're going to be godly people. Send them to college and see what happens.
Wow, almost like that's the topic for next week.
Wait, it is.
We talked about this, dude. Oh, come on.
I'm sorry. I don't remember this. Okay, anyway, you ready for a list?
Yeah, I'm ready for a Luke's list. Found the cat again.
I did find the cat this week. All right, anyway, this article comes to us from
Huffington Post.
Global Christian Relief.
Ooh.
By Robert Kina in Asia, the continent. It could be anywhere.
That's a big continent.
It could be anywhere in Asia. This is 5 ways isolation can radically deepen your faith. I have not vetted this article at all, so let's find out what we have.
Find out.
Let's see.
I swear, if this is a Buddhist.
Hey, guys. Okay. Have you ever had thoughts that are contrary to the Mormon Church? That's one of my favorite office moments is when Michael is doing the intervention for Meredith and says that line. I laugh every time. Okay, sorry. Number one, isolation and solitude strip down our lives. Isolation and solitude force us to look inside our own hearts, to pause and to look deeply, to see what's there apart from the slapdash of our busy lives. Isolation simplifies our lives and amplifies our hearts so we can approach God in a new and unfettered way, a slow way. That's number one.
Yep, that is number one.
Okay, I'm just going to move on to number two then. But I mean, again, I think it goes back to what you said. Be in your thoughts for 5 minutes. You can get stuff. You can get some stuff done. You mm-hmm. can get some great things done. Be in your thoughts for 30 minutes to an hour. We can be talking ourselves off the ledge. So yeah, isolation is not
onto a ledge.
Onto the ledge. Yes. Sorry.
I mean, I guess it depends which direction when it comes to off the ledge.
We'll just don't worry about it. We're not cutting that out. But you Just ignore that part. All right, number two, isolation and solitude reveal the current that carries us. I don't know what that means, but let's find out. There's a big, huge quote that I'm going to skip. And isolation and solitude allow us to truly see what might be entangling us in this world and holding us back from seeing the actual spiritual reality, both in the external world and in our own hearts.
A little bit new age for my taste.
You're just not with that new age stuff, man. No. Listen, I got this church for you. Okay, this guy named Steven. He's a real great guy. Number three, isolation and solitude form the geography for an authentic encounter with God.
No.
Okay, I haven't even read the reasoning.
You can.
Can I read it?
But it's no.
When Elijah ran in fear from Jezebel to the desert, he fell quickly into despair, asking the Lord to take his life. However, it was in this isolated desert experience that God gave Elijah what he needed and even allowed Elijah to hear the very voice of God. Similarly, Hae-woo of North Korea in prison powerfully experienced God when she was alone and uncertain she would survive to the next day. I'm guessing this is like if you're completely isolated, you can actually like hear God's voice.
You know, there once was a man. You know, in the 400s, he was in the wilderness in Arabia, and an angel appeared before him and told him about how he was the prophet and that he would be the one to transcribe the book that was unwritten from eternity past. Quran.
Is this a story of Santa Claus? Okay, anyway, no. Number four.
He heard the voice of many spirits and gods.
You know, and I have a lot of friends that hear the voice of many spirits and many gods. Mostly they're on drugs, but it doesn't matter.
Joseph Smith and Moroni, you know, just many examples of why that's not a good example.
Number four, isolation and solitude can expand our prayer lives. Our physical space is limited in times of isolation. Still, it can expand our spiritual space. Wow, that was a really good use of words right there. Opening our eyes to the needs around the world and our ability to step into those stories through the power of prayer.
Okay, if they're saying you should be alone when you pray, okay, yeah, I can understand that.
I don't think so. I think they're talking about the actual act of isolating, like isolation, solitude, being alone for a long period of time. I don't think this is talking. I'm not getting the
like momentary isolation where you're seeking the face of God in prayer. Okay, yeah, sure. That's fine. Isolation of many, many months so that you can do that. No.
You can't see a new authentic version of God. Salad,
so I have no idea what they were trying to convey.
For an authentic encounter with God. Yeah. Okay. Number five, final one, is number five, isolation and solitude can increase our passion for his presence. Okay, I'll keep going. Pastor name that I can't pronounce, was held for more than 2 years and a life sentence in North Korea labor camps. When he was released, he shared his story. Okay, I'm just going to go past the story. Where is it? Every Sunday, we may never experience the extreme isolation of Pastor Lim. Still, times of separation and solitude can drive us back into the beauty of the presence of God like nothing else can, reminding us of the words of King David, "Better is one day in your courts than 1,000 elsewhere."
So if you're lacking in your spiritual drive, you might be down in the dumps. Just go to a North Korean labor camp.
I was going to make that joke, but then I thought it was probably a little too touchy. Probably shouldn't do that. But you did that. I'm allow it. But let's watch ourselves here.
That's what that was saying.
Well, I mean, he's making the point that I'm going to start defending. He's making the point that being in that isolation. Our passion for his presence, I guess, is feeling the presence of God in a room with you. And this long time that this pastor sat in that room, he felt like he was more in tune with the presence of God. Do I think all this is true? I don't know. I've never been in a North Korean prison camp. I've never been in any prison camp for the least. But yeah, I don't know how we would anywhere become close to replicating that. Because I don't know. But yeah, I don't think the isolation is going to work out for that one. And that's my list.
Yeah.
Why? Why does it have to be me?
It was a list.
Even when I give you a good list, you give me a me.
Yeah.
Whatever, dude. Anyway, yeah. Any more thoughts on isolating?
Yeah.
Do you want to isolate together?
That defeats the purpose.
All right. Well, I'm going to go home and be in solitude for the next 72 hours.
No, you won't.
To really, what is the number four? No, there's number three. To really have an authentic encounter with God. It has to be authentic. Not your non-authentic ones. Anyway, that's been the episode about isolating and isolationism. And it's not about the World War II type. It's about the religious type. Next week, we will be going over why you are wrong about Christian colleges. Christian Ooh. Colleges. And now everyone that knows me is going, uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Oh, man. Next week will be great. I still don't know how we're going to go about that episode, but we'll do it. Maybe we'll get like a sponsorship next week. We should call up every Christian college and say, if you give us a sponsorship, we'll talk really good about you. But if you don't, then all of our listeners will hear how bad you are.
That's a good plan. I don't see how that could possibly backfire.
I don't see. Yeah, what do you think? Like maybe $100? I do it for 20.
I do it for 10. Are you kidding me?
I do it for a dollar. Anyway, where can people find us, Jeremiah?
You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at First Off You're Wrong. You can also find us on X at F_O_Y_W. You can find us, you can email us your suggestions for episodes at contact@firstoffyourewrong. Where can people listen to us, Luke?
People can listen to us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, but you already knew that. And with that, the most important lesson that you've all learned this week is that first off, you're wrong.
Bye.